ओम गणचमिनंदस्य जनांजन सुरकया चक्षु सुमिलतांजन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोविष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदामयं नदति सपन्दन्तिकम् Manas the copper dubious jack, if it's in the bay, but a petit term, bombine, bill by Savannah. We are now returning to Sri Vrindavan Dham in the 16th chapter of the 10th canto, wherein this chapter Krishna has chastised Kaliya, the serpent who is poisoning the Jamuna water. And as Krishna is doing this, Kaliya had enwrapped him in his coils. And we, by the mercy of Sukadeva Goswami and Sutta Goswami, and of course, the mercy of the Acharyas, great Acharyas, including our Srila Prabhupada, have witnessed how the residents of Vrindavan reacted to Krishna's being in a impossible, life-threatening situation. And in this way, by the arrangement of Krishna and Krishna's internal energy, his Leela Shakti, his Yoga Maya, we have the opportunity to see what true selfless love is. Because this is the highest standard of devotion. And of course, as we know in the Rasa Panchadhyaya, the five chapters that will be coming up very soon that describe Krishna's dealings with his most intimate devotees, the Vrajagopis, we'll see the highest summit of the intimacy of the devotional dealings. No. So we'll see that later, Krishna willing. But now, after seeing the residents of Vrindavan, so how did they react when Krishna was in difficulty? There was not the slightest concern for their own safety, for their own welfare. All they could think of was, Krishna is in difficulty. My life is useless. My life has no meaning. My life is empty. There is nothing of value if I lose Krishna. Krishna is everything. Krishna Mata, Krishna Pita, Krishna Pradhan. Krishna is everything. This is the focus. Yavya Satmika Bhudi Ekaha Kurunandana. This is the focus of the residents of Vrindavan upon Krishna. There's nothing else. Nothing else is of value. Nothing else at all. It is only Krishna. This is love. This is pure spiritual love. Atmendriya priti vansa tari kam. That in this material world, that which is disguised as love is actually selfishness. Kam. It is lust. Self-centered pleasure. But here the residents of Vrindavan only cared for Krishna's pleasure. In the Bhakti Samhita Sindhu Nectar Devotion, it describes because we say that if one becomes a pure devotee of Krishna, one will experience great happiness. So there's a tendency, and the cessation of miseries. But so there's a tendency to think that I'll perform my devotional service to get my happiness and to remove my miseries. But when it comes to the heights of the associates of Krishna, they have no interest in either removing miseries or attaining happiness. And indeed, if they are experiencing transcendental ecstasy, and we're always experiencing transcendental ecstasy, and if that ecstasy impedes, gets in the way of their devotional service, their service to Krishna, they want to stop the ecstasy. They choose the service, pleasing Krishna over their own ecstasy. Such an incredibly high standard of devotion, of seva, of love, of bhakti. So we have just seen that. And what we're up to, how the residents of Vrindavan, they became stunned. The cows became stunned. The calves became stunned. The boys became stunned. Just looking at Krishna, Mother Yasoda attempted to enter into the waters of the Jamuna. Nanda Maharaj entered. Balaram stopped them all. He smiled, knowing well that there is actually no harm for Krishna, can come to Krishna. And he stopped them from he mitigated their sufferings to some degree. And then Krishna finally jumped upon, when he didn't want to see the residents of Vrindavan suffer any longer. Kali held him for 48 minutes, one muhurta. And then finally Krishna expanded himself, danced upon the heads of Kaliya, purified Kaliya by kicking him with his feet again and again and again until Kaliya was left struggling for his life. And then finally he understood that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he surrendered. At that point, the wives of Kaliya, Naga Kanyagan, they came out and they began to offer prayers. And now we'll hear, there's quite a few prayers of them. We'll hear some of them today, of the prayers. And it's amazing. Anyway, we'll hear the amazingness of it. The first thing they're going to say to Krishna in the first six verses, 33 through 38, is that this snake, because Krishna kicked him again and again as he danced upon his heads and was killing him by the striking of his feet, by his kicking. He was killing Kaliya. So the Nagapatnis, they came out and they said that this snake has certainly deserved the punishment that you're giving him. They weren't going to come out and say, because they were devotees. They were actually great devotees. And it was by their mercy the seed of devotion had been planted in Kaliya's heart. But he was too envious because of Sarpajati. He was born in an envious species of snake, which is defined by their envy, practically speaking. So they begin their prayers. And they were all their prayers in this section, 33 to 38, will be agreeing with the punishment and saying indeed that this snake, Kaliya, who you've kicked and almost killed, you've bestowed the greatest fortune. So in one sense, what we're going to hear is, if this snake is so fortunate, having attained the blessing of being almost killed by Krishna, kicked continuously by him in the form of his punishment for his envy, and that was ultimately the greatest fortune for him and the greatest benefit for him. How fortunate are those residents of Vrindavan that we just had the opportunity to glimpse at, even though it appeared as if they were in distress. Why did it appear that they were in distress? No, yes, but what did it look like? No, I'm not talking about them, but the residents of Vrindavan, they saw Krishna enwrapped in the coils of the snake and they were miserable. It appeared as if they were in distress, but actually their fortune, due to their direct love, was beyond compare. Everything that they do, because it is based on love for Krishna, causes varieties of ecstasies. These are vyavacharis and sanchari bhavas. They are moving throughout themselves based on and different sattvika bhavas, different ecstasies, intense ecstasies, and anubhavas, all based on their stai bhava. This is the science of rasa that Srila Rupa Goswami describes in Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion. Based on their permanent relationship with Krishna, they're experiencing varieties of ecstasies. So we have to know that in those varieties of ecstasies, there is the greatest fortune. Even though externally, it appears as something quite different. It appears as lamentation or devastation. They were stunned and they're shocked as they stared at Krishna, who was enwrapped again in the coils of Kaliya. But actually they were experiencing the highest focused ecstasy due to their loving devotion for Krishna. So we have to see or hear what the Nagapatnis are saying in their prayers in relationship to what is actually the highest fortune. And then we should examine Kaliya's fortune, or the fortune we are trying to attain by our aspirations to be devotees of Krishna, servants of Krishna, with any other thing that we may consider fortunate within this world. We have our definitions of what would be fortunate if it happens to me today or tomorrow or next week, or what would be a misfortune if it happens to me today, tomorrow, or next week or next month. And we strive in our lives to gain the fortune, icha dvesha samutena dvanva mohena bharata, and to repel the misfortunes. This is the dvanva, the dualities that keep us moving forever in the material world. Like it's like we're boxers fighting the material energy, looking, you know, trying to move backwards and move forwards and strike like that. But it's just ultimately we're going to get knocked out completely ultimately. So we think fortune is gaining something in the material world, and fortune is removing an obstacle to what we're going to gain. But actually, we really have to, on the deepest levels, define our understanding of what is fortunate and what is unfortunate. This has to be reorganized within our consciousness. Our priorities must be set differently than our materialistic tendencies and materialistic conditionings, and we have to understand what is truly fortunate, what is truly unfortunate. So let's hear some of the prayers of the Nagapatnis, the wives of the Kaliyanag. First one, anugraho yam bhavata krito hino dando shatam te kalu kama sapaha yadanda sukhatvam amushya dehinam krodo pite anugra eva samata. The word danda, which comes up many times in this verse, what does danda mean? Stick. Meant for punishment. And that comes up many times in this verse, and also the word anugraha, which means mercy. So the punishment that Krishna gives to Kaliya is truly and only his mercy, they will say. So here's the translation. So the Nagapatnis are speaking to Krishna. What you have done here. Oh, no, excuse me, I read the second verse first. That was 34. Here's the 33rd verse. It begins, Nyayo Nagapatni Uchu. Nyayo Hidanda Kritakil Bishayas means Tava Avatara Kalu Nigrahaya. Ripo Sutanam Apitulya Dristir Datsu Dhamam Phalam Evanu Samsam. But this indeed, Nyayo, it is fair and just, it is logical, it is proper. But this, what you have done, certainly, he, Nyayo, he dandam, this punishment you have done, krita kilvishe, to he who has committed so many offenses, this snake, Asman, this person, Tava Avatar, your descent into this world, Kala Nigrahaya is for the subjugation of those who are envious. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam. So Krishna comes to subdue the duskrita, the malevolent actors. And therefore, since the Nagapatnis are saying that since you have come to subdue the envious, your action in punishing Kaliya is certainly proper. It is certainly fair and correct. Nyaya, it is just. Because you are equal, repose sutanam to an apitulya dristi. Tulya means equal, dristi you see. Repo means enemy. Enemy and sutanam means friend. So you see enemies and friends equally. Datse daman phalam evanu samsayam. And having this equal vision, you give punishment properly, considering this. Here's the translation. The punishment this offender has been subjected to is certainly just. After all, you have incarnated within this world to curb down envious and cruel persons. You are so impartial that you look equally upon your enemies and your own sons. For when you impose a punishment on a living being, you know it to be for his ultimate benefit. So this is the affection that Krishna deals with all living entities, with the equal vision of a father acting only for the benefit of everyone. If one trusts that fully, then one can live in this world free from anxiety. And that is the only way to be free from anxiety, to trust Krishna's kind hand, that his punishments even are for our ultimate benefit. Now we'll read some of the comments of the acharyas to these texts. Srila Sridhar Swami says, first, trying to pacify the Lord who is still angry. Yes, Krishna becomes angry. God becomes angry. What is the cause of his anger? What's the most prominent lila where Krishna becomes angry? Is that what you think of? Huh? Nrisingadev. And who does he become angry at? And why does he become angry at Aranyakashipu? Because he's threatened to kill Prahlad. So why is Krishna angry at Kaliya? Huh? He polluted and poisoned the Jamuna and killed cows and the boys. So Krishna was furious and punished him. So, first trying to pacify the Lord who is still angry by acknowledging the correctness of his giving punishment, the Nagapatnis offered prayers in the verse beginning with Nyaya. For you there is no discrepancy in terms of punishment or favor, as they state by the words beginning Datsya Dhammam. Because Datsya Dhammam means you give punishment. And it's equal to everyone. And it's for everyone's ultimate benefit. You don't see any difference. Ripo sutanam. You don't see any difference between your friend and your son when you're awarding punishment. And it's for everyone's benefit. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, the punishment upon him who the offense, Kilvisham, has been committed is stated by the words beginning Tava. Although in actuality your descent is for the purpose of spreading devotional service and pure love of God, still it is when evil has been subdued, then that can be accomplished. With that in mind, they speak. You, having equal vision for one who on account of his equal evil nature is envious, and also for one who on account of his being saintly is an object of affection, just like a son, you treat them equally. Or you give your punishment to enemies, even to sons who commit offense. Why? Being equal in vision, you are the same to enemies and sons. So the example perhaps will be given a little bit later, that the son of his enemy he treated so wonderfully and gave so much affection to. Who was his enemy? Aranyakashipu again. And his son was Prahlad. So he didn't hold any enmity against the son of his enemy. And his own son, who was inimical, Narakasura, Bomasura also. Yes, Bomasura, Narakasura. He killed when he proved to be envious. So Krishna is equal to all. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho stina priya. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, his comment. First of all, praising him in order to pacify his anger, they show agreement with his giving of punishment by the word beginning nyaya. By this, the implication is that the inevitable result which is to be achieved by enviousness towards Krishna, enviousness towards himself, which becomes characterized by enmity towards the saintly devotees, has been attained by Kaliya. But they declare there is never any unfair partiality on your part, for you act to protect the civilized members of society and hold in check the wicked. Ripo Sutanam, by the use of the words api, means to sons who are enemies, since the Lord sees equally his own sons and an enemy. Thus we see that the Lord protected the saintly Prahlad and even killed his own son, Narakasura. And they state, even in subduing the envious, there is no hatred on his part, as they state by the words beginning with Datsye, Datsye Damam, after considering you punished. Explaining that by counteracting the various hellish miseries which would be due on account of envious, I give the fruit of eternal happiness, characterizes liberation. So this is the result of Krishna's punishment, ultimately of Kaliya, is that he's elevated, completely liberated from all his sins, because Krishna has touched him with his lotus feet, freeing him from all sins. And on the other hand, if he was left to his envy in his envious ways, he would have had to suffer so much. So is this truly punishment or is it benediction? That's what even though he brought him to an inch of losing his life, it was truly a benediction. So this is what the Nagapatnis are saying. Then the next verse, I read the Sanskrit already. What you have done here is actually mercy for us. So the first verse said, it was just, it was proper. What you did, it was justified, how you punished the snake. And it was actually, in this verse they say, is merciful to us what you have done. Since the punishment you give to the wicked certainly drives away all the contamination. Indeed, because this conditioned soul, our husband, is so sinful that he has assumed the body of a serpent, your anger towards him is obviously to be understood as your mercy. More about how merciful Krishna was to. He was so envious, the reaction of being envious, having an envious mentality. What does envy mean? Huh? Yes, intolerance for another's success. You cannot tolerate anything good. Prabhupada once told a story that epitomized envy. Is that these two people were inimical to each other. And one of them got appointed as a judge. This is subtle Bengali humor, perhaps. So a mutual friend came. Did you hear that such and such person was appointed a judge? Got an elevated position? And the person replied, anyway, if he was appointed a judge, they're probably not paying him anything. Couldn't tolerate, had to minimize, could not tolerate the success of another. That's envy, and the result of an envious mentality is what? Birth is a snake. Snakes are very envious. They are filled with the heat of their poison. They cannot tolerate someone even walking near them. They'll bite, what to speak of, someone kicks them. The opposite of envy is tolerance. Snakes have no tolerance. And therefore, as described in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, even a sadhu is happy when a snake is killed. Why? Huh? Why? Why is even a sadhu happy? The snake dies, and there's only one way for him to go up, to go, and that's up in his birth. So that's how bad being a snake birth is, and that's how bad enviousness is. Just see. So he's so envious, this conditioned soul. Our husband is so sinful. So sinful, the epitome of sin is envy, that he has assumed the body of a serpent. And what is the opposite of envy? So we can say what envy is when you cannot tolerate another person's success. So what is the opposite of that? No? What is the opposite of that? Because tatiksha would mean you can tolerate another person's success. But what's higher than tolerating another person's success? Huh? You're happy. You feel great happiness with another's success. So what is that called? When you feel so much happiness with every benefit that a person gains. Huh? Love. So the opposite of envy is love. So your anger towards him is obviously to be understood as your mercy. Here is the purport here. Srila Madhvacharya points out in this connection that when a pious person suffers in this world, he realizes the punishment that the Supreme Lord is meting out to me is actually his causeless mercy. And this is one way we can see if we are pious or not pious. According to this definition of piety by Srila Madhvacharya, the punishment the Supreme Lord is meting out to me is actually his causeless mercy. So perhaps the Supreme Lord, he is Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes. He is the ultimate cause of everything. So we get hit with a stick, and he is ultimately the one holding the stick. The stick may be something else completely. The stick may even be happy to beat us. But the person holding the stick, Krishna, the cause of all causes, it is by his mercy. So that is the way a pious person, pious means pure. Thanks. Continuing, envious persons, however, even after being punished by the Lord for their purification, continue to envy him and be resentful. And this attitude is the reason for their continued failure to understand the absolute truth. This is an exalted platform. Tateyana kampam susimikshamano munjane vapma kupava. We'll read a comment of other acharyas here. Srila Sridharaswami says, the Nagapatnis have previously stated that your punishment is indeed mercy. And they now state that this is your mercy. This is your mercy. It's not at all punishment. In the verse beginning, Angraha, because it is seen that he has assumed the form of a serpent, thus the punishment which eradicated the sinfulness due to that birth is indeed mercy, even though it appears to be a manifestation of anger. Sanatana Goswami. The use of the masculine gender of the word of us who are impure, so that's in 34, that comes out. What you have done here is actually mercy for us. And they're referring in one sense to the snake, to Kaliya, but they're saying it's mercy for us. So Sanatana Goswami is saying that is the masculine gender in the word us, who are impure, is because of their grouping themselves together with Kaliya. They're considering themselves the same as Kaliya. So they say us, your punishment. We sometimes do that. There's us. It's a polite way of speaking. By the word Eva, so they're also telling him that you're punishing us by doing this, because they're trying to actually cool Krishna down and have him benedict further and spare his life, because they're kind-hearted devotees. By the word Eva is indicated that this is not in any way punishment. This has been thoroughly considered by ourselves, the Nagapatnis, and by learned persons. Your punishment eradicates the contamination in all impure persons and uproots their evil desires. This very fact is directly experienceable. Even of this person who is falsely identifying with the material body and who has been a great offender, the condition of being a serpent is, as we see, being removed by his developing pure intelligence through the process of taking shelter. So the result of being kicked and kicked and kicked and kicked and brought almost to the point of death by Krishna is that he takes shelter of Krishna, which is the only thing that is really beneficial. So indeed, that kicking was the greatest of benedictions, because it brought him away from his envious mentality towards being a servant of Krishna. Remember that Kaliya, when he first saw Krishna, he saw how beautiful he was, but he could not tolerate that Krishna was entering his place. He saw it as a challenge, and then he became angry and tried to kill him. That even the anger, which is the basis of this punishment, is actually mercy, and thus it is commendable. Or else punishment in the sense of killing him has not been done by you. You haven't killed him. So certainly that is your mercy. He tried to kill you and you're sparing him. Kaliya's anger is simply the nature of his species, and it has been accepted by you as the reason for showing mercy, since you have allowed him to envelop you in his serpent body, and since you have acted towards him by dancing with great joy upon his heads, which were rising up in anger. Chakravarti Thakur has a short comment. You are actually therefore only showing mercy even to the wicked, although such appears to be punishment. This punishment against us is driving away our contamination, the various long-standing sins, because of which this spirit soul has assumed the form of a serpent. Therefore, even your anger is actually mercy. Text 35, the next verse. Now, the next question that's asked, what? You've been so merciful to him, they've established. What could have possibly been the cause of that mercy? What could this snake have done that has attracted so much mercy. And remember again that he was envious of Krishna, and Krishna almost killed him. So if we see, if we accept that indeed, in fact, Krishna was so merciful by his dealings with Kaliya, just imagine the mercy that the residents of Vrindavan have achieved if being almost killed by Krishna is so merciful. And that's how he reciprocates with Kaliya's intentions and actions. Just imagine how much mercy the residents of Vrindavan are carrying. Just imagine. So they're saying, how is it possible? What has he done that has caused you so much mercy to be attracted to him? Did our husband carefully perform austerities in a previous life with his mind free of pride and full of respect for others? So these are the pious activities that one does that attracts Krishna's mercy. That's also described in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, right at the end. I can't remember the verse at this moment. But Krishna is attracted, saintly persons are attracted to the pious. Does anyone know the verse I'm thinking of? Text 30, I believe, the 7th chapter. Maybe you can find it. If you tell me the first verse, I should probably get most of the verse. So did our husband carefully perform austerities in a previous life with his mind free of pride and full of respect for others? 7th chapter, it's after. And it starts, has drida vrataha, they worship you, maybe with. It's right after the verse I just quoted, te dvanvam mohavami mukta. That's probably the verse. So, yes, that's the verse. I can't remember the beginning. Mzante mam dridavata, maybe then. Give it to me. Please. No, I told you the wrong one. Yesham, Santikata, Papam, Jananam, Punya Kamanam. They're persons who are freed, Antigata, Papam, and they're freed from sinful actions, and Jananam, Punya Kamanam, and they are pious, they perform pious actions, Te Dvanva, Moha, Niyamukta, they're free from the dualities. They, Bhajante Mam, these are the people who worship me, Nridavata, with great determination. So here are, like, qualifications they're asking. Did Kaliya actually do these things to gain what he has gained? Did our husband carefully perform austerities in a previous life with his mind free of pride and full of respect for others? Is that why you are pleased with him? And how did Krishna show his pleasure? By dancing upon his heads? Or did he in some previous existence carefully execute religious duties with compassion for all living beings? And is that why you, the life of all living beings, are now satisfied with him? Purport. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada comments in his Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Volume 1, Chapter 16. The Nagapatnis confirm that one cannot come in contact with Krishna without having executed pious activities in devotional service in one's previous life. As Lord Chaitanya advised, in previous lives, plural. As Lord Chaitanya advised in his Sikastak, one has to execute devotional service by humbly chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, and not expecting honor for oneself, but offering all kinds of honor to others. Amanina, Manadena, Kirtanya, Sadahari. The Nagapatnis were astonished that although Kaliya had the body of a serpent as the result of grievous sinful activities, at the same time he was in contact with the Lord to the extent that the Lord's lotus feet were touching his hoods. Certainly this was not the ordinary result of pious activities These two contradictory facts astonish him. He's so sinful, yet he's gaining the fortune that only the most pious attain. Srila Sridhar Swami makes a comment like that. There must have been some previously committed pious activities, he says. Sanatana Goswami says, the excellences Kaliya may have performed, the excellence Kaliya may have performed is shown by the words beginning Narasta, by the two adjectives devoid of pride and giving honor to others, is stated how he became fit, even though by nature acting in pride and enviousness, by eradicating these different bad qualities through austerity, by refusing to believe the Kaliya could have been satisfied with such austerities, they attempt another hypothesis with the word beginning Dharma. This implied completion of the idea is done with mercy towards all, means characterized by nonviolence to all living entities and also by acting beneficially. Previously, it's said because of such qualities being absent in this life. So he must have done it previously. Anything good he must have done previously, because in this life he's been horrible and envious. He's a snake, poisonous snake, a greatly poisonous snake, and his pleasure was giving trouble to others. So he must have done it previously. So many pious, non-envious, dharmic, religious activities, performed austerities. He must have done it. By which austerities and so on, he whom all living beings belong becomes satisfied, to whom all becomes Krishna must have been satisfied with his austerities. The idea being that on account of respect and compassion being shown to all living entities, by the absence of false pride, envy, and violence, automatically the satisfaction of the Lord is achieved. These are the type of qualities that are described in the end of the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that they please Krishna. They're wonderful qualities, actually. I should read them, because they're qualities that it's worthy of developing, Srila Sanatana Goswami says, because they, in and of themselves, are pleasing to Krishna. Beginning Advesha Sava Bhutanam Maitra Karuna Evacha. One who is non-envious and a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed upon me, such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. He for whom no one is put into difficulty, keep that one in mind, and who is not disturbed by anyone, doesn't cause anyone difficulty, and doesn't become disturbed by the difficulties that others seem to have placed him in. He was equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, and without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. One who is equal to all friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge, and who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. Krishna concludes the 12th chapter in that way. Has anyone memorized those verses in the 12th chapter? It's very common in India that devotees have regardless of what sampradaya they're in, they memorize those verses to know how they can become dear to Krishna. So the Vishnav Chakravarti Thakur comments, even though appearing as punishment, it is not so, but rather that which is very difficult to attain on the part of a cultured person, this Kaliya has gotten very easily. And what is that that he has gotten? A cultured person cannot get it, but he has gotten it, the touch of Krishna's lotus feet upon his head. In that connection, what great pious activities must he have performed in the past? Thus conjecturing, they speak the verse beginning with tapa, by one who is freed from pride, because of not being puffed up, lacking any desire for being shown respect by others, who is manada, who gives respect to others. By this it is implied that his austerities were Vaishnava in nature. Since we do not see lack of false pride and willingness to give respect to others amongst performers of austerities who are not Vaishnavas, and since those who perform other kinds of austerities are not recipients of your satisfaction. That religious duty which is characterized by compassion to all persons has been performed, which indicates the Vaishnava character also of his Dharma. Since we do not find compassion for all beings amongst the Karmis, by which austerities enjoined by religious principles did he become so satisfied, did Krishna become so satisfied that he joyfully engaged in dancing upon Kali's heads, taking them as his dancing stage? How has Krishna given him so much mercy? By proper respect and compassion for all living beings become satisfied, and those, your good self also becomes satisfied because you are present within the temples of all living beings. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that implied in this is you give life to all, and thus why is it that you are beating with the striking of your heels this person who has given satisfaction to you? In other words, they're trying to get him indirectly to spare his life, Krishna to spare his life. Text 36. This is a very famous verse. Kasyanu bhavosyana deva vidmahi tavangri renu sparishara karaha yalvanchiyat sri lalanacharattapo vahaya kamam sucharam dritavata. So this is saying how unique the mercy you're giving him is. They are continuing with the same line of thought. O Lord, we do not know how the serpent Kali has attained this great opportunity of being touched by the dust of your lotus feet. They're saying, in other words, the austerities and piety that we previously, or just said in the previous verse, don't seem enough to have granted him the fortune that he has achieved. Again, so if he's achieved such great fortune, just imagine, krita sakyam vicharu krita punja punja, what kind of piety the coward boys have performed for birth after birth to have granted them playing with Krishna as a friend. Sakyam vicharu krita punja punja. So how is it that he has attained, what could he have done to get him being touched by the dust of your lotus feet? For this end, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, performed austerities for centuries, giving up all desires and taking austere vows. Sridhar Swami comments, that goddess of fortune whose grace even Brahma and others desire through their austerities, she, the consort Sridevi, the best of women, executed penance with the desire to become qualified to touch your lotus feet. Of him, the serpent, what could he have performed? Or in other words, What could he have possibly have done to have achieved this when the goddess of fortune, who is worshipped by Brahma to get her favor, could not achieve it after centuries, hundreds and hundreds of years of austerities? Srila Jiva Goswami. In the phrase beginning Yad Vanchiyat, the word Sri refers to her who appears as the darling consort of the Lord of Vaikuntha and other forms of Vishnu. In this connection, Tapa, since she is a woman, refers to worship of her husband and therefore means that her worship became more excellent than previously. Because of her being greedy for this particular appearance of the Lord in the form of the son of the great king of Braja, it is quite fitting that she developed hankering for him. That even she was unable to achieve him by performing austerities extending through the three phases of time, past, present, and future, is hinted at the words beginning Kasyanu Abhavasya. What result is she able to get? She cannot get the result that she wants to attain the lotus feet of Krishna. So how rare that is. How qualified one has to be. How much mercy one has to attain. Jiva Goswami continues. And the reason for her being unable to attain him is that she did not have the same exclusive devotion as the gopis. So that this is all glorifying the residents of Vrindavan ultimately. Although actually it is by the association of them, the Nagapatnis, the topmost devotees, that Kaliya has been able to take up residence in Sri Vrindavan. But still we understand that because of their considering themselves as fallen, they considered his living there, because of his involving the contact of the dust of the Lord's feet, must fall under the category of being the consequence of some other pious activity on Kaliya's part. The actual pious activity was their mercy because they were devotees. But they are considering themselves fallen, so they're speaking in this way. Srila Vishal Chakravarti Thakur comments. The rising of good fortune could not be simply caused by penances performed, but rather it is inexplicable, the power of your mercy. They speak this idea in three verses beginning Kasya. We do not know what this must be the effect of. Of what is this the consequence that Kaliya is receiving this mercy even though he is the most fallen? They replied to this with the idea that the qualification which he has shown for touching your two lotus feet, those of the son of Nanda, is impossible to acquire even by austerities and all other pious activities. But this person has attained the contact of your two lotus feet. And that, moreover, was in the form of dancing. And that even further, that dancing was upon his own head. Therefore, how great the glories of his fortune for she, who, Lakshmi Devi, who is superior to Brahma and all other devotees, the consort of you in the form of Narayan, performed austerities with the desire of getting the touch of the lotus feet of you in their form as a coward boy, but still she could not achieve it. So again, what was the actual cause of the mercy? It was his association. And this will be described actually later with the Nagapatnis, who were devotees. Srila Sanatana Goswami says, the privilege to touch the dust of your two feet on the part of this offender Kaliya is the influence, the fruit of how many austerities and penances, that we do not know, since this is impossible to attain, even by austerities and so on. How is it difficult to attain Krishna's feet? How difficult it is to attain Krishna's feet is described with the words beginning yat. And they declare that this is quite fitting by addressing the Lord, O Deva, referring to him in terms of his wonder, his unlimited glories. That's what the word Deva means. Deva is a name of Krishna that means he who possesses unlimited glories. Or else, or you who is absorbed in playful activities, which implies that even now it is very difficult to achieve the qualification to simply be touched by the dust of your lotus feet, even though you are simply absorbed in the childish pastimes of this kind of dancing and so forth. When Lakshmi descended upon this earth, even though she is eternally established as your dearmost, she had to perform austerities to gain you, which implies the same above-mentioned fact that the dust of his lotus feet is very difficult to attain. Or else, when the extreme sweetness of Sri Krishna was seen by the goddess of fortune, and even though she is eternally present upon the chest of the Lord of Vaikuntha, she became greedy and performed austerities in order to gain him. Nevertheless, she could not obtain that Krishna, but was only able to get the benediction of taking up residence upon his chest in the form of a golden line, Srivatsa, which is the explanation given in the Agama Shastra, the Pancharatra. So there's two more verses in this section of prayers, but we'll stop here, where they're expressing the fortune of Kaliya. So again, if Kaliya is so fortunate, just see how fortunate are the cowherd boys, the cows, the grass of Vrindavan, that so much that Brahma is praying to take his birth even as a resident of a blade of grass. So the residents of Vrindavan walking upon him will bless him. Not even the dust of Krishna's feet, but the dust of the devotees of Krishna's feet. So this is the ultimate fortune. Any questions or comments? Yes. There's more than two, actually. Yes. There's bhakti sukriti, which is specifically will give birth to bhakti. Sometimes it's agyata sukriti. It is not even conscious of it. Someone takes some prasadam, doesn't know it's prasadam. Someone helps a devotee in some way or another. Doesn't not doing it because with consciousness, but he just helps a devotee. Things like that. That will give the sukriti, the piety, to one day become a devotee and become very advanced. And then there's the karma sukriti, which gives one, you give charity and you get back charity more than you give. And then there's jnana sukriti also, that performing activities that will give one the proclivity and ability to perform the practices of jnana. And also even mystic yoga or tantra sukritis. Yeah.
Yes. One who performs karma sukriti, jnana sukriti, can they become qualified to attain the mercy of Krishna?
Yes. But not through their karma and jnana sukritis, only through bhakti sukriti. What text? Yes.
Second paragraph. It says, as the Lord said, I am not pleased with wealth or with austerity. Ordinary austerity do not invoke the mercy of God. In some previous life, Kali executed his duty with compassion for all living entities, and thus he is Vaishnava.
Yeah. In other words, the austerities that they're talking about, that's what Vishwanath says, were Vaishnava austerities, not godless austerities, were like Haranikashipu performed. So he's showing that these were in this context, that they were Vaishnava oriented ones.
So, there's similarly in Dhar Sangeet also, there in this thing, how from this Kali Atapan got into that river?
In where?
In the Yamuna.
Yeah.
Because of the mercy of the Lord, shelter and Durga was after him. And then he said, okay, that's the only shelter because the sovereign Muni was residing there, so Durga cannot go, but he got a curse.
That's next Lord, chapter.
Lord's mercy is coming from previous birth of, you know, Kali Sarkar.
But the indication what the Lord's mercy was coming that allowed him to go, stay in Vrindavan, etc., was from his association with the Nagapatnis. That's what the indication is, and there's more to be spoken about this later. Yes. In other words, association with devotees gives Sukriti, that bhakti Sukriti. Distribute prasadam, distribute knowledge, clean the temple, do something any every day for Krishna. This is the austerities of the. This is described in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Austerities of the tongue, to eat only prasadam is a Vaishnava austerity. To not speak nonsense, gramya katha, Vaishnava austerity. To get up early is a Vaishnava austerity. To refrain from the things that we refrain from is a Vaishnava austerity. Well, I mentioned some specific ones that, like, take the vow to take only prasadam is a Vaishnava austerity. That's specifically known as a Vaishnava austerity. Prabhupada is specifically called it that.
There's nothing to do which isn't the Vaishnava austerity,
I think. I guess you can speak for yourself. Ideally.
Yeah,
to be very focused, to accept everything favorable. I mean, this is and reject everything unfavorable in the beginning. This is quite an austerity because your mind wants to do other things. You know, in this age, you know, to not have a television in your house is a Vaishnava austerity. Because everyone else is doing it for their pleasure. You know, to refrain from eating grains on Ekadasi, and tomorrow's Ekadasi, yes? Or to even fast on Ekadasi, this is a Vaishnava austerity. This is the proper use of the austerity of fasting on Ekadasi. In other words, he meant that we don't have a past of piety, at least some of us don't have it. And therefore, just by his association, that gave so much piety, so much taste, that our bad conditioning was overcome. Could be overcome. That's what he meant.
So somehow you get the association of such an advanced devotee, you might be able to, even if you don't have that piety.
But a devotee will naturally think himself like impious, like the Nagapatnis, like all the Goswamis, the most exalted devotees were thinking, I'm so fallen, don't touch me. Haridas Thakur wouldn't go into the, wouldn't stand there, he wouldn't. Sanatana Goswami wouldn't even walk near the priest of the Jagannath Mandir, the Pujaris. So, bereft of piety, I'm sinful. I have no piety. Which is the opposite of the mentality that we may tend to have, an arrogance due to our births. The unculturedness of our birth. You know, a certain material piety is there sometimes. Live in the land of the long weekend. You're born in that land. And that's a certain type of piety, but it's material piety, but which doesn't help one's devotional service in and of itself. So what helps it is humility. So to exchange the feeling of how great I am, great big false ego, with humility, that's one of the purposes of Prabhupada making that statement. Thank you very much.